What's up, guys? Welcome in to the EPL Lounge once again. I am joined by the always brilliant Sergio. Welcome back, my man. Another week of Premier League football under our belts and another exciting weekend as well, has to be said.
Thanks, Josh. Yeah, Premier League season already living up to what we expected. Fans making a big impact and another really, really interesting round coming up. Looking forward to dissecting it with you.
Fans definitely making their impact to start the season, that's for sure. Guys, as always, we'll take a look at the Match Day 2 winners, losers, and then take a look at Match Day 3 feature games. We'll put up some of the projection models for the scorelines there and then go a little bit in depth as to how we think those ones will play out. But with Match Day 2 fresh on our minds, Serge, let's jump straight into the winners column for this one. I'll let you kick it off. Who have you got for the biggest winners from this weekend?
So I've got two winners this weekend. First winner I want to give a shout out to is Wolves. I know it seems a really odd choice on the surface, given that, you know, they lost and they haven't started the season particularly well if you just look at results. But what I have seen so far this season from this team is just a really, really brilliant style of play, like just real attacking intent. And, you know, we saw them do it 2 weeks in a row, second time around against Spurs. Really, really unfortunate not to get something out of the game. And, you know, Bruno Lage willingness to press forward on the front foot, but also an ability to contain the opposition better than other teams that have attacked. And, you know, I'm thinking about Leeds particularly. even when, you know, Wolves pushed forward and opened themselves up and were chasing that equaliser, they managed to contain Spurs on the counter-attack. And, you know, one thing I really admired, not necessarily on the counter, but even in the middle of the park, their ability to win back the ball after that second touch, you know, it was just Barcelona-esque to me. So, you have to give a big shout-out to Wolves. I think they've got a really bright season ahead of them, despite the loss. And, you know, Bruno Lage said it himself. He's like, you know, this is, you know, the result, maybe not so much, but this bodes really well for the performance for our prospects for the season. So I think they're going to do really well.
I was very close. I actually had Wolves in my column to start with, and then I scratched them out purely because I find it hard to put them there on the fact that they – not only haven't picked up a point yet and have lost both games, they haven't scored a goal yet either, which is, you know, at the end of the day, I think things will turn for them because, like you said, that everything is there for them bar the results and the goals. And once that comes, I think it'll absolutely click for them. But if, let's say hypothetically, it doesn't quite click and we're, you know, 10 games into the season and they're in the relegation zone, then I think that's also all people really care about. And that's obviously going to become worrying for the fans to have to follow, you know, a situation like that unfolding. And, you know, does the board then get a little bit antsy in questioning whether this style of play is necessarily the right approach for a team like Wolves who maybe don't have the personnel to execute it?
Yeah, actually, that's a really good point. You know, it's one thing to be able to play in that style and to perform well in games, but unless you get the results, especially for a team like Wolves that, you know, doesn't have the best starting 11 or the best squad in the league, that eventually gets into your mind. And I think if they pick up another couple of losses, if they don't start actually converting these good performances into victories, that's going to filter into their self-belief and it's going to affect their ability to continue to play in this way. So as well as they have started, it is important to start getting putting some points on the board.
Yeah. Definitely at some point has to come. And it doesn't get any easier this weekend, but we'll touch on that game a little bit later. Anyone else on your winners column for Match Day 2?
Yeah, I've actually got Romelu Lukaku on my winners column.
Fair.
I just think, you know, great performance, but even more so than that, I think what he's going to bring to this Chelsea team, I think we got a glimpse of that. And I think we've sort of had this discussion over the last couple of weeks over whether, you know, do you even need a number nine anymore in the modern game? You know, we've got false nines. Obviously, City dominated the league last season with Aguero on the bench for large portions of it and it didn't affect them. Obviously, Chelsea won the Champions League and, you know, you can argue that they haven't had a real I guess since Diego Costa, they haven't had a really prolific sort of solid 20 to 30 goal a season striker, unless I'm forgetting someone. But I think that a number nine is just going to bring so much to them. And I don't even think that Lukaku is an exceptional footballer, to be honest with you. I don't put him in the same category as players like Suarez or Aguero or, you know, but I do think he's a brilliant number nine. And I think that when the chances come his way, I think, you know, he will score them in every manner imaginable, with his head, with both feet. I think he's just going to be really dangerous in the box. And I think he's going to get the service with this Chelsea team, the way they're playing at the moment.
He'll get the service all season. Like he'll score 20, 25 goals this season. And if Chelsea didn't scare me enough as it is, like this is sort of the nail in the coffin that I think cements them as genuine title contenders. I think not just for this season, but they're pretty well set up for the foreseeable future as well. But yeah, impressive debut. Not even like goal aside, just an impressive debut, and absolutely bullied the shit out of those Arsenal centre backs. But it has to be said, it was Arsenal. Let's also, you know, put some perspective around that, because, you know, it was only a week ago Brentford's two centre forwards were bullying Arsenal centre backs as well. So, you know, let's. There's an interesting one. What do you think? 2-0 to Chelsea is a good result for Arsenal these days, Serge?
Look, I expected more from Arsenal in this game. I'll be completely honest. And look, I don't want to talk about them. I don't want to spoil the surprise for my losers column. Arsenal are there. I had them in my losers column last week, and I think, and we completely ripped them a new ass crack last week. And I think that we still overrated them based on this performance, because I thought they would come to this derby ready to fight. And it didn't feel like a derby. I think it could not have been more disappointing for Arsenal. Yeah.
Fair. Well, I'll let you get to your losers in a second. I've got just the two winners for me real quick. One of them, Brighton. 2-2 to start the season, a win away at Burnley. And then a very convincing win at home to Watford as well. Absolutely dominated, created plenty, took their chances as well. And I think that was always the biggest question mark for Brighton, was that they've always had the ability to create chances. It's just about putting the ball in the back of the net. 4 goals the first 2 games. You know, they've been clinical when the chances have come their way. Continue to play terrific football, though. And like, I just cannot give Graham Potter enough props for the job he's done with that team with such limited resources there. But they play fantastic football. They're very well organized. They're difficult to break down. A 2-0 win against Watford at home, you know, it's not really going to turn heads by any means. But I just think they've set themselves up so well. And they have such a, I don't want to say soft, because it's the Premier League and there's no soft schedule, but a very favorable run to start the year. And I think that they can really string together some momentum going into that first international break, and then on the back of that international break as well, and really push, I think, for a top half finish this year. So, yeah. Big props to Brighton, I think, to start the year. Maybe I'm getting a little bit carried away. It is only match day 2, but I like what I see from them at the moment.
Look, no doubt it's a fantastic start to the season. And I was very negative about their chances prior to the season starting. I'm not necessarily ready to rescind my criticism, but... you know, it is early days, and I think it's difficult to avoid the temptation, but I don't want to look at the league table until game 9. That's usually my philosophy, quarter way point, especially for these lower table teams that are capable of putting a run together of 2 or 3 wins and then collapsing after that. But having said that, they couldn't have started the season any better so far.
Yeah,
good football and the results. So.
I've only got one other winner as well for this week. It's actually Nuno Espirito Santo over at Tottenham. I agree with you. They're outplayed by Wolves thoroughly, and they were outplayed as well by City the week before. But he's got results. It's 2 from 2 from a man who, let's be honest, I mean, he was probably like the 10th choice manager for Daniel Levy and Tottenham. So he's come in there without a whole lot of buzz and, you know, I want to say without a whole lot of support either from the board or from the fans, because I don't think either really was filled with any sort of positive emotion by his appointment. But at the end of the day, it's a results-driven industry and it's a results-driven business, and he's come out, start the season with two wins from two. And, you know, regardless, I think, of what happens with this Harry Kane saga, he's at least brought a level of belief back to that squad that they might actually be in contention for a top four finish. I don't think they're going to come anywhere near it by the end of the season, but at least given them an impetus to sort of fight week in, week out, to see exactly what the squad is capable of before, I think, revamping next season and working out exactly what it is they need to bring in.
Yeah, again, it's an interesting one. It's sort of like the theme of the show so far, I feel like. What do you value more at this stage of the season, like the results or the performances? Obviously, yeah, like, you'd rather have the results. Let's not beat around the bush. But I did expect more from Tottenham, coming off the back of a fortuitous win against City, that would give them a little bit of momentum and that they would take the game to Wolves a little bit more. But, you know, just seeing them completely outplayed, you know, it's interesting. You know, on some level, they deserve respect for that. The fact that they dug their heels in, they defended the early goal, the softish penalty, in my opinion. But
it was soft.
They did what they had to do, and they do deserve credit. And I mean, they just have to build on it. If they keep playing the way they're playing, it can be excused against Manchester City, but they're going to have to raise a level of their performance. Otherwise, those wins are going to start turning into losses. But
And when it does, I'll be very quick to jump on the other side of the fence here. But props where they're due. You know, you can only celebrate what you've got, and they've got 6 points in the bag. So there's fair that. Enough. Let's look at the losers column, though. Look, do you want to kick this one off as well? I mean, I think I know where you're going with this one, right?
I've just got one loser this week, and there could have been more. There were some contenders, but I just chosen the one loser for emphasis, because I'm just that disappointed in Arsenal. Like I said, I really expected them to lift their game for the derby, and it's just been not just disappointing results, but really, really disappointing performances in both cases. We've got some commentary here from an Arsenal fan.
Yeah, and look, this is one thing I agree with, and I said it last week after that Brentford loss, and I'm not going to reiterate it, but, you know, this is still a depleted Arsenal team. I don't think it's a true reflection necessarily of what they're capable of this season. And because they're not a squad that's necessarily inundated with talent, when you take away key pieces like, you know, their best central midfielder, their best attackers, you know, one of their best centre backs, maybe both their best centre backs. I don't know. I guess it depends on how you rate them. But, you know, this is going to happen to any team. And unfortunately for Arsenal, it's straight off the bat and to start the league. And the fact that Brentford result was so horrible means it's just going to sort of compound, I guess, the pressure that comes with each game after that. And the fact that, you know, it's going to get much harder this weekend. I'm not defending them because they were so poor, and they were just, even against Brentford, like I watch them and I sometimes just think, like, are these players even engaged? Like, do they want to play for Arteta? Do they want to play for the club? Like, how much do they actually care? And that is probably the biggest worry of all so far for Arsenal.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm not ready to necessarily judge them in their entirety until they do get that full squad back.
Yeah, and to be fair, it's not just Arsenal. Every team, I very, very, very rarely, if ever, will give a pass to a team for missing players, because I kind of appreciate that it really is a squad game in today's day and age, with the number of competitions that clubs play, and that every club has injuries and suspensions, and I know some more than others, you know, and I'm not even willing to give Liverpool a pass necessarily for last season. I mean, in reality, missing players do make a difference, but when you're, at the end of the day, the owners of Arsenal aren't going to look at it like that. If they lose another couple of games on the trot, they're not going to say, oh, but, you know, Arteta's got, you know, so many players missing that when they come back into the team, it just doesn't work like that. If you're not getting the results, the manager's going to get the chop, and it's a ruthless game, but I think that's the way it is and always has been.
Yeah, fair. Look, like I said, I'm not going to argue them being in the losers column whatsoever. I haven't got them there personally. Yet, if things keep going the way they're going, especially when they get those players back, they'll kind of just cement themselves in that column for me week in, week out. But I'm willing to sort of just, yeah. I also, like, I don't really know that I was expecting that much from them either. So maybe that's part of the reason for me. But I've got three losers. I won't harp on about them too much. One is Crystal Palace. You know, 1 point from the opening two games. Sure, that's one thing. The lowest expected goals return in 180 minutes so far this Premier League season. Yes, small sample size, that's fine. But a team that absolutely just does not know what its identity is right now under Vieira. And, you know, we spoke about it before match day one when we were saying these teams that sort of bring in new managers who were taken over after the previous manager had been there for so long to try and sort of implement their style of play is very difficult, especially for these sort of teams that have players that, I guess, you know, without, at the end of the day, they're still Premier League players, but they're just not of the caliber of the top tier teams. And some of them are so robust and so sort of set in their ways that it's difficult to get them to adjust to a new style. And I think Palace are really in that situation right now. And I'm genuinely worried about them going forward. It kind of reminds me of a few seasons ago when, was it Frank de Boer that they bought in, who tried to come in and play an attacking style? And, you know, they started the season with like 2 points in the first seven games or something before he got sacked. And it's just reminiscent of that. Like, I don't know how patient they're going to be with Vieira. And if they're too patient, then they could put themselves in a really sticky situation.
Yeah, I think the squad itself is in transition, which makes it even more difficult for Vieira. It doesn't really have a stable base of players that have been there at the club for a really long time. In addition to, as you're saying, you know, he's the sort of manager that is going to try and play his style. And does he necessarily have the personnel for it in this league? You know, having said that, yeah, the expected goals is really interesting stat. And, you know, a draw against Brentford, they were flying high after the week one, but it is still Brentford. And it's probably a game that, certainly a game that Palace will have been chasing the 3 points in.
Yeah. In that game against Brentford, a 0.6 expected goal return. And that was after posting a 0.16 against Chelsea the week before. Which, like I said, it's Chelsea, that's fine. At Stamford Bridge, they're going to, you know, frustrate a lot of people and a lot of teams. But, you know, what's that, a 1.77 expected goal return over 180 minutes? That's poor. That's really poor.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, just the same way that we said about Wolves, it's going to be really important to get the results now any way you can, especially at this stage of the season, start building up momentum, get a bit of confidence going. So Vieira is going to have to turn things around. And unfortunately, a team like Palace in the situation that they're in, he doesn't really have the luxury of time. He's not going to have a season to build this team and get them playing the way that he wants to. He's probably going to have until Christmas, really. So
yeah,
exactly. I'm sure he's aware of that.
Yeah, I'm sure he is too. I don't know what the direction is for that team right now, and I don't know what the short-term solution is either. But two more losers for me. One is, these kind of both go against what your winners columns were as well. One is Adama Traore.
Yeah.
He was brilliant against Tottenham until it came to the final delivery or finishing his opportunities that came his way. And that was the exact same as what it was against Leicester. He's now missed 2 one-on-ones, one against Leicester, one against Tottenham, that have cost his team points. And it's just, for all the amazing things he does and for all the good he does, that end product is so subpar that it not only undoes the good work he does, but it just gives people reason to sort of focus solely on the misses and the mistakes he's making at that end of the field. And you know, like you said, for a team like Wolves, like you've got to start getting those results. And he is a key piece of that front line and of that team right now. And, you know, if a key piece is misfiring the way he is, and he's not necessarily had a great strike rate either in years gone by, so it's not necessarily anything new, but that one-on-one with Lloris was just horrible. It was exactly the same as the one-on-one the week prior against Michael, and fluffed his lines both times. And it's just, you know, those are the margins that points are decided in the Premier League. And like I said, he's cost his team two in back-to-back weeks now.
I think the incredible thing is that he's like right on the margin of being in the winners or losers column. Has he, if he scores a goal in that game,
oh, 100%.
He's a winner for me. That's like how close he was to actually being in the winners column. Because as you said, he was an absolute menace.
Yeah.
They could not contain him. He just wasn't able to finish anything. But yeah, absolutely, you know, brilliant display. The only thing he needs to do is start putting the ball in the back of their net or be a little bit more composed when he's teeing up his teammates as well.
Yeah. So loser for me this week, but I'm completely with you. I hope that he makes the winner's column more often than not this season, just because he's was just brilliant in every other facet. And it's just unfortunate that it's the area that they most needed him, that he's let them down. The other one is Timo Werner, which sort of goes hand in hand with your Romelu Lukaku winner. Played 1 minute in his in the derby after they, you know, seemingly found their new number nine. And I don't know what his role is at Chelsea now. Obviously, he's just a squad player, and that's a season after, you know, he's come in with such big reputation in the Bundesliga to potentially be the next big thing in England. And it's just he's fallen flat on his face. And I like I said, it's going to be interesting to see exactly what his career trajectory is from here and just how much game time he gets now for Chelsea with Lukaku there, particularly in Premier League and in meaningful fixtures.
Yeah, he could still be an important player for the squad because, you know, as we talked about, there's injuries, there's multiple competitions, and maybe being out of the spotlight will suit him a little bit. It's going to be frustrating for a player of that caliber to be sitting on the bench, obviously. But you know, he'll train hard and he'll be sniffing down Lukaku's neck. And you know, I think Lukaku is going to be a great player for Chelsea. As you said, I completely agree. I think he's going to get a bag load of goals this season. But at the end of the day, if Lukaku stays fit and he's bagging them in, then they're not really going to need Werner, are they?
Yeah, exactly. And he's just too wasteful, Timo Werner. I think he's brilliant. Like his movement to get in behind, his ability to drop in between the lines is fantastic. He's just not clinical. And unfortunately, especially when you're at these top clubs as well, where you know, you get chances with regularity, and when you're fluffing them more often than not, it becomes very noticeable for everyone.
Would you trade him for Morata?
God, no. No. I'd keep Timo Werner for sure. Yeah. I still think he has qualities and attributes. I worry about exactly, like I said, what his career trajectory is from here now that Lukaku is there and the main man. You're right, he could benefit from not being the main man, but yeah, he could go absolutely the other way.
Isn't it funny that the second striker is just seemed surplus to requirements these days when, you know, five seasons ago even, you know, most big clubs had four strikers on the books.
Yeah, exactly. Let's move ahead, though, to match day three. Like I said, there's a few intriguing fixtures. We'll look at four of them today, take a look at the model projections and see how we think they're going to play out. Kicking things off, it's only fitting that we talk more about Arsenal, seeing as how that's seemingly the theme of the show today. Man City hosting the Gunners. Our model projection, Man City 2.2 to Arsenal 0.96. The market at the moment, minus 1.75 for Man City, which unfortunately for me and for Punt School members means we might be on Arsenal there with a handicap because the model does show value there. Look, again, it's just, are they getting players back? Are they not getting players back? You look at the fixtures last season between these two teams and in the league anyway, Arsenal did a pretty good job of stifling City, and I don't know how much of it is, you know, Arteta being able to sort of come up with a game plan to scheme against Guardiola having, you know, been his right-hand man for so long. But I want to hope that Arsenal can keep it close, but at the same time, it's like, as soon as City go a goal up, I think that's done and dusted, right? 1-0 is game over for them because I don't see how they come back the other way and actually make a game of it.
Well, I have to be consistent with what I've said about Arsenal so far. And I look at this fixture and, you know, I had more hope for Norwich last round, to be honest with you, against Manchester City. So based on what I've seen from Arsenal, I don't know how they keep this at a respectable scoreline. I don't even, I can't even contemplate them getting anything from this fixture. Sorry to the Arsenal fans, but yeah.
You're not wrong. Like, I have no hope of them winning this fixture whatsoever. I don't even think that they can pick up a point. It's kind of just, I guess, what's the approach going to be? Are they going to go, like, this is probably the first fixture, I think, this season where the expectation is kind of just damage limitation a little bit. You know, your first game against a newly promoted club, you're expected to go and win and be on the front foot the entire game. The game against Chelsea, it's a derby. You've got to be up for it. Anything can happen in these sort of games. Yeah, I agree. They should have been better. They should have had more fight and spirit about them, yada, yada, yada. But in this fixture, they come in knowing full well their back's going to be against the wall. They're going to have very little possession. They're going to create very little down the other end of the field. Does that change the mindset of the players? And then does the manager sort of come up with something during the week to sort of get them ready to just sit deep, cut passing lanes, you know, defend the channels and essentially just look to play on the counter?
Well, I actually just looked up to see whether Aubameyang or even Lacazette would be returning.
It's a weird situation.
But I think that could be a big factor in the game, because I think, Aubameyang in particular, if you've got him available, you've got that outlet that can actually steal something.
Yeah.
You know, they might feel that they're able to sit deep and push forward, and at the odd opportunity, look, Spurs did it. Not away from home, but you know, the blueprint is there. The smash and grab against City is always an option, and I think you're absolutely right. I think they're going to be set up to defend and try and contain them a little bit more, unless Arteta completely loses his mind. I don't know. Yeah, look, there could be something to the fact that, you know, he knows Guardiola's style so well, and you know, he knows how to stifle it too.
Yeah, so last season's games, both in the league anyway, sorry, both finished 1-0. But not even just the 1-0. I'm just having a look now. City at home, 59% possession. Just 5 shots on target in that game. Away from home, 55% possession, just 3 shots on target. And they went up 1-0 after just 2 minutes in that game as well, with the Raheem Sterling goal. So, I just think that it's in their best interest to kind of, you know, like I said, it's just damage limitation. And even if they go a goal behind, I don't think that they're necessarily going to change their approach and try and go and get that goal back, particularly not if it's early. I think the emphasis will still be to sit deep and to limit what City can create. And as the game wears on, maybe then you sort of look to be a little bit more expansive. And in the final 10, 15, you kind of, maybe that's when you roll the dice. But I do see a world where this is probably closer than what a lot of people imagine. Maybe I'm just talking myself into the fact that I'm going to be playing Arsenal with the handicap at plus 1.75 this weekend. But, you know, early kickoff as well. Strange things happen in the early kickoffs in the Premier League all the time for whatever reason. I don't know what it is about that time slot, but, you know, like I said, I'm not willing to say Arsenal are going to get a point out of this game, but I just think that it's going to be one of those situations where they can make it boring enough and nullify enough of what City do to make it a respectable loss. And maybe that in itself is enough to kickstart Arsenal's season.
Yeah, look, I don't think that, I don't know, a club of Arsenal's size being happy with a respectable loss. Can you imagine the Arsenal TV guys celebrating a respectable loss?
Part of it is, I think you also got to accept what you are now, and you're not a top club.
Yeah, look, I see what you're saying looking at last season. I also think you have to look at the context of this season. I think that the heat is on Arsenal now after those two really embarrassing displays. I think a lot will hinge on whether they do get players back. I think some of the returning players could make a difference and give them an opportunity to play like a little bit of a different style of football. But I still see a route here for City personally.
Like I said, I'm clutching at straws here. I'm kind of just trying to convince myself that the model play is the right play to make in this game. But yeah, look, I'm going to go out and say City 1-0 again.
I'll say City 4-0.
It's just, yeah, that's the state of this club. Let's move on. Let's leave enough Arsenal for today. My feature game for this weekend, and I think probably the most competitive game of this weekend, Liverpool hosting Chelsea at Anfield. The model says Liverpool 1.93, Chelsea 1.39. Shows a little bit of value towards the home side at the moment on the Asian handicap. If you can catch Liverpool at the draw no bet, which I think might still be in a playable range before it's the week goes on. But this one is going to be a ton of fun. You know, the atmosphere at Anfield was absolutely electric, and that was Burnley. So I think it's fair to say it'll be turned up a notch for this game. I love what I'm seeing from this Liverpool team. I don't care what anyone has to say in terms of who they've played, and it's two games into the season. This is very much the team I expected. It's very much the team that I'm expecting to see out the season, and why I'm so bullish on them winning major silverware this year. Just the difference Van Dijk makes. I mean, the guy is just unbelievable. He literally looks like he hasn't missed a game of football. It's just also effortless. But what he does for that team and how he changes the mindset and ability to sort of play in terms of going forward is just fantastic. Like, his distribution is astonishing. It's just unfair sometimes. But more than that, it's that the fullbacks are allowed to gamble and get forward up the field every single time without fail. And that just creates overloads all across the park for them in that final third. And that's what makes it so difficult to contain them and why they're able to get so many crosses into the box and create so many, goal scoring opportunities. It's a case of sort of, you know, death by numbers with Liverpool. And I said it that year where they won the title, they never created a whole heap of very clear cut chances, but they would create 15, 16, you know, if you want to call them half chances a game or even less than that, you know, expected goals sort of, an expected goal of 0.45 is considered a big chance. Liverpool would average, you know, a 0.2 expected goals, but just the sheer number and volume of those opportunities meant that they were scoring goals with regularity. And that's what they've sort of done to start this season. They haven't necessarily torn the teams to shreds and created these unbelievable goal scoring chances in every game that they've played, but they keep creating enough that, you know, three goals against Norwich, two goals against Burnley are kind of just formalities, and they could have been more in both of those games as well. But again, it all just comes back to the stability that Van Dijk gives them at the back. Obviously, I think Matip as well is extremely underrated in that department. But I think for this particular fixture, it's going to be very interesting to see whether Chelsea are kind of going to sit a little bit deeper and try to absorb this pressure, or if they're willing to go toe-to-toe, because depending on which they sort of decide on, I think is dependent on what sort of game we're going to get, whether it's an open, free-flowing contest back and forth with goals at either end, or if it's going to be one goal kind of decides it.
Yeah, look, it's difficult to argue with the quality of Liverpool's performances this season, and it's very difficult to argue with the influence of Van Dijk on the back and what he actually brings to the team when he's in the lineup. And we see that just as much when he's not in the 11 as we do when he is in the 11. It looked like a different team without him. Having said that, like you said, this is the first real big test for Liverpool this season. I think it's going to be an absolutely cracking game. Really, really excited for it. I do think that Chelsea are going to sit deep to begin with. I think there is just too much that Liverpool can do to punish you if you give them space in the final third. And look, as we saw, as we've seen so far this season, you know, this was a team that, you know, they used to say is a one-man team with Salah, but there is just so much attacking threat that ball from Firmino to who scored the first goal?
Yeah, Jota's goal to start was just like he Jota's movement inside the opponent's box is just like fantastic. I think it's the most underrated part of his game and something that not enough people sort of give him credit for either. He is so instinctual inside the opponent box. Like his goals to minutes ratio for Liverpool is just incredible. Absolutely ridiculous. I'd love to say that it's going to keep up for an entire season. I don't think so. But it just shows when you have all four of those front four fit and available, the options that they have and that Klopp has on a weekly basis to sort of, you know, work with during the week and decipher exactly what trio is best for each individual opponent is what makes Liverpool so difficult. Because especially once all four are sort of fit, I mean, Firmino's kind of still making his way back because he was late to pre-season, but once all fit, four are fit and ready, as an opposing manager, you don't know which three are going to line up against you. And, you know, there have also been times where he's lined up with all four of them, and that in itself is a nightmare, really. But, yeah, for me, for this game, I agree with you. I think Chelsea are going to come into it starting deep, looking to sort of nullify any attacking threats and all the cliches, take the crowd out of the game, you know, play to your tempo. I don't know if they're even going to ever at any point try and be more expansive either. I think they're going to be more than happy to just sit and frustrate, chance their arm on the counter. I mean, they've got pace to burn themselves. Pulisic has been really good to start the season as well for them. Try and sort of get Lukaku in one-on-one situations, maybe with Matip where he can stand him up and use his strength. But yeah, that Van Dijk Lukaku matchup, I think, is going to make for very interesting viewing for most neutrals this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really, really fascinating matchup. And absolutely, man. I think this is going to be the game of the season thus far. And, you know, the thing is, when you've got two titans playing against each other, you know, there's a boxing saying that comes to mind, which is everyone's got a plan until you get punched. Right. And yeah. I think that, you know, Chelsea might go in there and say, look, we're going to sit back, we're going to absorb pressure. But if Liverpool get an early goal, Chelsea have to pivot and play a completely different style of game. And, you know, likewise, Liverpool will have to shift. And, you know, I think that's the beautiful thing about the Premier League. When you've got these big clubs playing against each other, the game doesn't follow a formula anymore. You don't have one team defending and one team attacking. You know, it's a tale of two halves, and it does depend on the circumstances. And it's going to be an absolutely fascinating contest. I'm going for a draw in this one, personally.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for 1-1, but I feel that you're a little bit more optimistic about Liverpool's chances.
Optimistic, Serge? I'm not sweating at all. Liverpool 2-0 this weekend. I just think that, like I said, I do think that they will come out very aggressive, feed off of the energy in the stadium, and I think that they will find a route to goal in that first sort of 20, 30 minutes. And if they do, like you said, if it'll force Chelsea to sort of adapt and have to be a little bit more expansive, and that's when Liverpool, especially at home, are just as dangerous as any team in the world. When you give them the space to get in behind and to play on the counter, you know, there's not a lot of teams, I think, that can sort of stop them from doing what they do in those situations. So, yeah, I'm not fazed. We'll be sitting top of the table with 9 points next week in the show. I promise you that.
I'm gonna hold you to a prediction now, then. So, do you think that Van Dijk is going to have Lukaku in his pocket at the end of by the end of the 90 minutes?
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. So no joy for Lukaku in this fixture.
No joy for Romelu Lukaku in this fixture whatsoever. I think Chelsea's best route to goal is going to try and be to attack Tsimikas at left back. I don't think Andy Robertson will be back. I'd be very surprised if they throw him in this fixture, given, you know, he's missed the start of the season because of injury. That was kind of the weak point against Norwich. You saw Cantwell, you saw Rashica both sort of switching and taking turns at him and having success down, you know, the Norwich right-hand side. Burnley less so, but obviously it's Burnley and they're sort of limited in exactly what they can do going forward. But I think that's going to be Chelsea's best chance, is to try and, yeah, isolate, get in behind, you know, on the counter, especially down that their right-hand side. But, you know, if it's a situation where balls are coming into the box, and, you know, I feel very comfortable with what we've got back there. So, yeah, don't expect Lukaku to have too much of an impact on this game, Serge.
Okay.
Let's take a look at one that I've lined up especially for you, Serge. Burnley at home to Leeds. Are your boys finally going to get their first win of the Premier League season? The model says yes again. It said yes last week. It says yes this week. Burnley 1.41, Leeds 1.87 for this weekend. How are you feeling going into this fixture?
Very confident, Josh.
Oh, look. Good. At least we share that sentiment for this weekend.
Yeah, look, it was a disappointing result, especially given the context of the game. I mean, you look at the stats and you see Leeds dominating the ball, dominating passes made, passes completed, you know, all those important metrics. You know, the one interesting metric that I will concede doesn't bode so well for Leeds is the chances created. It was pretty even on both sides, which suggests two things. One, Leeds weren't doing enough with the possession that they had in terms of actually carving out goal scoring opportunities. And two, that, again, a little bit lackluster without the ball, defending. And that's going to be an ongoing problem this season. And I don't know if it's something that Bielsa is necessarily hell-bent on addressing, given his style of play. But look, you look at this team, I think the quality is there. You know, I was very critical of Cock last week. He was dropped from the starting lineup. Calvin Phillips came in. They reshuffled the lineup a little bit. And I think that, you know, we really noticed the difference there as well. I think it was a really promising performance. The penalty, I don't know. I don't know. I think it was a soft penalty. I can see why it's given when it's slowed down, but I don't think that's ever given in real time.
Never. You see a lot of those, I don't want to say every week, but you see them with regularity throughout a season, and I've never seen one of them given before. And it's one of those things where they've now kind of, you know, set a standard as to how they're going to call that, and I'd like to see what happens the next time a situation like that arises.
Yeah, totally. And look, the VAR has caused as many problems as it's solved. That's another conversation. We can have a VAR debate maybe another week. The other thing that I think was really promising about the performance, obviously, was the fact that Leeds came from behind twice. You know, it does show a little bit of psychological strength to go behind and you know, to fight back and get that equaliser and to do that twice. And I think, you know, the players that sort of stood out a little bit in the first round for me anyway, the likes of Click and Rafinha and Bamford, I think we saw that interplay and that quality among them. And I still think Rodrigo is going to make an impact at some point this season. He was also dropped to the bench this week, but I think that he had a poor first game, but that happens. I think he'll work his way back into the team and have an impact. So in summary, yeah, Leeds, I'm going for 3-1 away from home.
Big win away from home. Big win away from home. I like it. I love the optimism, Serge. Look, I'm with you. I'm not going to argue it too much. I think Leeds pick up the 3 points here. I'm really starting to think that Burnley are going to be one of those teams genuinely fighting to avoid relegation come the end of the year, and much before that, obviously, as well. You know, they're two fixtures so far this season. Obviously, one away at Liverpool is not one where they're expected to necessarily pick anything up from. But I thought that they were pretty outplayed by Brighton at home the first match day of the season. I think Leeds are kind of a better Brighton going forward. And so, you know, if you know, the visitors were able to create as much as they were at Turf Moor that week, I think Leeds will have very similar success this time around as well. I do think Burnley will get on the scorecard. I just, you know, that direct style of football, that physical bully ball, if you want to call it that, I think will have some success in this particular matchup. But I'm with you, man. I think there were signs of improvement in that Everton game. I think it certainly there was a level or an area of frustration at, you know, going behind twice, and then especially the periods of time where they conceded, where they were really on the front foot and very much in control of the game, to get caught out down the other end, and is just, you know, frustrating, no doubt. Frustrating for me as well, because I was on Leeds, but you know, I'm sure more frustrating for fans than for bettors. But yeah, this just sets itself up to be sort of the perfect bounce back spot for them, I think, and to really get their season up and running this weekend against a team that, let's be frank, is very much a tier below, I think, what Leeds are.
And let's be frank, I think a tier below Everton too.
Obviously, exactly.
A couple of tiers below Man United. So this is easily going to be Leeds' weakest opposition of the season. I think that they've got, you know, enough reason to be optimistic after round two, given the way they played. And, you know, they only know how to play one way. And I think we're going to see it again. And I, fingers crossed, it's going to be successful for them this time around.
Fingers crossed, Serge. I'm hoping we come into next week's show, both of us off of big resounding victories for our teams, and we'll make it an episode to remember for us, if nothing else.
I've got a surprise ready for Leeds' first 3 points of the season. I'm not going to spoil it, but there's going to be a surprise.
Oh, then let's definitely hope that it's this weekend. Then let's look at the final feature fixture that we'll look at for match day three. That's Wolves at home to Man U. And I think this is going to be a really fun game as well. Really interesting one. I mean, we spoke about it at the start of the show, Sam commenting here. I completely agree. Wolves deserve at least a point against Spurs. At least a point, if not more. But this matchup, I think, you know, it's going to be absolutely end-to-end stuff, where Wolves are clearly not fazed by playing anyone. I don't think they're going to adjust how they play. And we'll take the game to United, and we'll feed off of what was a really, really impressive atmosphere as well at Molineux. I think they'll have success as well in areas against United. It's all just going to come down to whether or not they're clinical when those chances do come their way. But I think that they will absolutely create them. But, you know, I think United are better than Tottenham playing on the counter. And when you play a Wolves team like this, you're going to get the opportunity to do so. And I think United are just going to execute it that little bit better, and that's going to lead to plenty of chances for them as well. So a really open, expansive game. The model has this one 1.66 to Wolves, 1.63 to United. So model actually likes Wolves for the upset here, but obviously marginally, like not enough to sort of quantify it as bettable or a play for us. But yeah, interesting projection numbers there. I agree. I think that they'll be motivated as well, having seen Southampton pick up a point there. Serge, what are your thoughts on this one? How is it going to play? Are United big G-ups, as our friend Roman has commented here, or are they set to sort of bounce back and pick up 3 points on the road? Has to be noted as well, 27 games they've been unbeaten away from home in the Premier League. A lot of draws in that time, but, you know, still impressive nonetheless.
Look, it might be a little bit of personal bias because as a Leeds supporter, I'm not very fond of Manchester United. And
you're not very fond of them, Serge. I mean, I'm trying to stay as neutral as possible here.
I'm going for a Wolves upset this week. I'm not scared to put it out there. Based on the way they played last week, I think it's going to be really interesting to see. As you said, you know, United pose a threat on the counter that Tottenham do not. So how is Bruno Lage going to approach this game? What if United get an early goal? I think if they play as, you know, as gung-ho as they did against Tottenham and leave themselves exposed with those one-on-one situations, they will get punished by United. So it's going to be really interesting to see. Look, I think Lage will play attacking football, but will he adjust and temper it a little bit more? Because they're very direct. They were pushing forward 5 minutes after conceding that first goal and leaving themselves very exposed at the back. I think that we see him play with a little bit more caution, especially if they go ahead. But look, you know, United, we've seen that they're not Look, it's very early to say, but they didn't look like title challengers in round two. And, you know, as the commenter pointed out, I think that's a fantastic point. Wolves are going to look at that and they're going to take heart from the way that Southampton managed to pick something up against United. And I think Wolves will fancy themselves. I think this is going to be low-key, a really, really fascinating game.
I'm not willing to say Wolves are going to win just yet. As much as, you know, me, you and every anti-United football fan will be cheering for. But, I think that they're going to give themselves the best possible opportunity to do so, because I just don't believe that they're going to necessarily adapt how they play. And it's dangerous and it could backfire drastically. I mean, just ask Leeds and Bielsa how it's happened the last two times that they've played United. But there's subtleties, I think, as well about Wolves' defensive structure that might bode well. And I think, like you mentioned as well, that reactionary press when they lose possession, especially in the middle of the park, is really, really good and really, really impressive. It asks a lot of the guys that are in there, so Neves and Matenia to start and Don Docker when he came on after that. But they execute it terrifically well. And if there's one thing I've learned about Paul Pogba over the years watching him, it's that he does not like being pressed and harried and rushed in any way, shape or form. And I still believe that as much as Bruno Fernandes is sort of the lead man, I guess, if you want, for United, I still believe that Pogba is the key to that team. And he sort of, I think, what will dictate where, you know, he's the one that's going to dictate sort of where they'll finish and what their true ceiling is. And it all comes back to sort of his performances. If Wolves do the same as what they did against Tottenham and they're able to really sort of press and harry and give very little time and space to those in the middle of the park and Pogba in particular, I don't think we're going to see the smoothest United either. And I think that, you know, maybe they don't have that same level of success on the counter when they don't have that guy to sort of feed him behind and play the balls. Like, you know, his passing range is fantastic when you give him the opportunity to do so. And if you don't give him the opportunity to do so, do you trust any of the other ones to really step in and do the job? Like, you know, if Fred or if McTominay or, you know, Matic, whoever it is that they choose to line up with, if they're the ones that you've got to rely on to sort of find that killer ball on the counter, do you feel quite as confident in them doing so? I think no. So, yeah, I mean, Wolves absolutely a chance at this game because, like I said, they're going to probably create. It just comes down to, are they going to be clinical enough? And that's kind of the biggest question mark around this team right now.
Yeah, that's a really good point about Pogba, and I actually agree. You know, when he's on, they look like such a better side, and, you know, he's a sort of player that, look, overall, I'm not the biggest Pogba fan, but when it comes to what he can do at a moment's notice, just that flash of brilliance, he's probably as good as any player in the league. He can look ineffective for 20 minutes and lazy and laboured, and then, you know, he just gets that one magical touch and puts a player through on goal. So he does have that ability, but he's also displayed that he's quite inconsistent.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there is something to having a game plan to take Pogba off his game and to frustrate him. And as you said, you know, be a little bit physical. Don't give him that time on the ball. You know, he's got very quick feet and he's a fantastic player when he's on. Yeah. And I think we saw that on the weekend as well, with the quick feet, even with pressure on him, he was able to wriggle out and find a player, create a goal. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they handle Pogba, and that could be one of the keys of the game. And again, look, I think Wolves have showed that they've done a little bit of a better job on the counter-attack than Leeds have this season in defending. I think they did a really good job of containing Spurs, counter-attack and in the middle of the park. And as we said, United, completely different opponent, but we'll see if they can emulate that.
Yeah, let's see indeed. Last comment here, Pogba playing like the French version of Pogba. Yeah, so far this season, yeah, this is kind of the French national team version of Pogba that United sort of have been craving for a few seasons now. It's just going to be, it comes down to consistency with him, and that's kind of always the case. All right, scoreline prediction for this one then, Serge, if you're going for Wolves.
2-1.
2-1? I think we need a lot of goals. I'm going to go for a draw, and I'm going to go 2-2.
Okay.
I think it's a share of the spoils. I'm not willing to say that they're going to get the win in its entirety, but yeah, it'll be fun to watch.
This is going to be a great round of football. There's a lot of really interesting fixtures. Can't wait.
Yeah. Well, with that, let's give it our best bet though before we do finish up the show. The model best bet for this week. It is 1-1 on the season, by the way, for our live show best bets. We didn't get the Newcastle Aston Villa overs because of a freaking ridiculous VAR decision where Wilson won a penalty, but then it was brought back because he was offside by about 0.1 of a centimeter, I think it was. One of those things that was supposed to be rectified this season, but apparently isn't rectified, and they're still calling it. Ridiculous. And I'd like to assume that they would have scored the penalty and we would have cashed the ticket, but anyway, we are 1-1 on the best bets so far this season. Unsurprisingly, I think Wolves Man U over 2.5 goals. Serge, is there any reason why you don't think it goes over 2.5?
Oh, given what we've seen this season, tough to see it staying at 2 goals or under.
Yeah, like I said, I'm predicting 2-2, so I've got fireworks galore. The model likes the overs as well. I love the overs in this one. Just a quick one, though, before we do sign off. I think, a lot does come down to the United lineup, and I just don't know Solskjaer is really set on what his preferred lineup is, especially in the middle of the park. Unfortunately, Martial just isn't quite the player that United thought that he would be, and he's just sort of stunted a little bit, and lack of development is kind of hindering the team a bit at the moment. But hey, all the more reason for us to cheer, right, Serge?
Yeah, I don't know. I've never hoped for a good Manchester United outfit. I'm not going to lie.
Look, that'll do it for episode 3, rather, of the EPL Lounge. Serge, appreciate you jumping on as always and talking more Premier League. There is one more game, actually, for match day 2 tomorrow. Leicester and West Ham, which I actually think is going to be a really intriguing game. You got anything on that one? Who do you think is going to pick up the points there before we officially roll into match day 3?
I'll go Leicester to pick up the points there.
I think they'll split them. I think a draw at West Ham seems about fair. The model, I think, says West Ham slightly, probably just giving them the advantage because of home field advantage. But a share of the spoils there for me, I think. That'll do it, like I said, for us this week. Serge, same time next week.
Can't wait. Thanks for having me, Josh.
No problem. Thanks, gents. Thanks, everyone, for watching, tuning in. Please make sure you do subscribe wherever it is you're watching, whether it's live on YouTube or listening to the podcast back on Spotify, iTunes, and otherwise. But we will catch you all next week for another installment of the EPL Lounge.